Okay, good evening everyone. Let us start in our meditation session. Please find a comfortable posture. Keep your back straight. Gently close your eyes. Relax your body. Take a few deep, long breaths. Release them. And relax your body. Relax your mind. Let us start by practicing loving kindness. Send thoughts of loving kindness to yourself first. Please repeat these positive and loving thoughts in your mind. May I be May I be free from anger. May I be free from suffering. May I be free from jealousy. May I be free from danger. May I be free from illness. May I May I be well. 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 Now, as we experience loving kindness, let us radiate the same loving thoughts to our friends. Send the same thoughts to our mother. Send the same thoughts to our father. Send the same thoughts to our brothers. Send the same thoughts to our sisters. Send the same thoughts to our relatives. Send the same thoughts to our friends. May my father be well, happy and peaceful. May my mother's be well, happy and peaceful. May my sisters be well, happy and peaceful. May my brothers be well, happy and peaceful. May my friends be well, happy and peaceful. May my relatives be well, happy and peaceful. Now send your thoughts to the whole world. May all beings be free from anger. May all beings be free from suffering. May all beings be free from danger. May all beings be free from jealousy. May all beings be free from illness and injury. May all beings be well. 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 Now slowly turn your attention to your breath. Every breath you take in and take out is taken mindfully. Focus on your natural, ordinary breaths. Our mind thoughts are going everywhere, maybe future, maybe past. That is the nature of our mind. Now you think mindfully present moment, breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out. Now observe your mind and observe your body. Your body is relaxed and your mind is relaxed, calm and peaceful. Please bring your palms together in front of your heart. Make a wish for yourself. May I be well. May I be happy. May I be peaceful. May peace be with you. Thank you very much. Open your eyes. Page number 4. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Sangham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi buddham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammam saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi sangham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Anicca vata sankhara uppada vaya dhammeno upajjitva nirujjante tesaṃ upasamosuko. Sabbe satta avera hondo. Sabbe satta abhyapajanto. Sabbe satta aniga hondo. Sabbe satta sukhi attanam pariharama dhamma manu ache padutena vasativa karotiva satonam dukkhamam veti. Shayava anapayimi. Manu pubbangama dhamma. manosetta manomaya manasace sannena bhasativa karotiva tato nam sukhamang eti chayava anapayini.
My name is Gus. Hi. apparently, someone who was supposed to give the Dharma talk tonight didn't show up or was busy with something else. So Rebecca asked me at the last minute to come up with something, which I did, since I like to hear the sound of my own voice. Just being honest. And I'd like to thank Bhante Dhamma Vihara for the good meditation and for Jessica to ask me to do this, because this is definitely a privilege, not a right. So let me get my glasses on here so I can see what I'm doing. I'm gonna try to read this. The light back here isn't very good. All right, so this is the Dharma talk, emptiness and no self. This was a good thing that I was able to, that I was asked to do this, because this is the fourth anniversary of my partner Joe, of his death, which I'm going to talk about here in the Dharma talk, and it's the 24th quit smoking anniversary, so I'm healthy and can breathe. All right, I was taught by my high school composition teacher not to start a speech or a written document with the word I. I just broke that rule. There, I did it again. It is not grammatically incorrect to do this. Rather, it is considered in poor taste to begin an oral written work by immediately focusing on oneself instead of the content of the message. However, in the case of this Dharma talk, the subject I is, and most definitely is not, thereby, the content of this personal sharing, since we're talking about the Dharma and no self. I'm going to share something of myself, which is my mind, heart. It is true. But what I have found in my mind, heart, after coming here to the Blue Lotus Temple 4 years ago, was not what I expected. I hoped to find a self inside my heart that was enlightened, confident, and sure to endure whatever slings and arrows of outrageous fortune that the future would throw at me, or to take arms against a sea of troubles and by opposing them, end them. A quote from Hamlet. It was not to be. What I found there in my heart was a gaping hole which had the remarkable shape of the Buddha. And this experience, this inside, even more remarkably, looked like a smiling Buddha. He did not have a big grin on his face as if he were the Cheshire Cat, who would mock poor Alice in Wonderland, the confused character who found everything that she encountered curiouser and curiouser. No, the Buddha had a slight smile as he gazed at me, as if to say, I understand. Find compassion in the Dharma. Compassion for your grief and the grief of others. You can do this. The emptiness within you is not a prison. It is an open space, as big as the universe itself. It is a freedom that you have never known before, and it is truly a bottomless, borderless, and unsurpassable freedom because it is not confined to an I. There is no I. There is no self. Even I am not here. Thus spoke the Buddha. When the emptiness inside me turned from the grief of Joe's death to an openness that can hold anything, no matter how large or small, painful, pleasurable, or even demonic or divine, understanding flowed out from the emptiness to fill my heart with light and warmth. The emptiness you see is not dark or menacing. It is full of light because it looks just like liberation. This is not mysticism. This is real. But it is also not science, as that word is understood in everyday speech. Science makes a claim to understand facts, a claim which assumes a particular and peculiar, and I am not using that word in a derogatory mood, view of the world that the Buddha would have found irrelevant. I say irrelevant and not wrong or false. The Buddha was sufficiently shrewd to withhold commenting on metaphysical questions, which lead to argumentation and confusion. The often repeated and innocently enough claims of neuroscience regarding the so-called truth of the benefits of meditation assume that people need the reassurance that meditation is not a waste of time. Personally, I didn't seek epistemologically sound hypotheses that would be acceptable to a scientist when my partner Joe died. What I did was practice meditation and thought about it later. Just as the Buddha doesn't ask me to believe anything, but to just practice the Eightfold Path and discover for myself what it is all about. Now, my education in philosophy, which is a Western, that is to say European, way of understanding reality, is based on the idea of being and is always opposed, right up to the 20th century, to nothingness. Consequently, what is the case in reality, what is referred to as a fact, is contrasted with what is not the case, that is to say, not a fact. This logical dyad is part and parcel of logical thinking. Now, I don't think that the logic of being and nothingness is wrong. I have found it to be, in my dharmic meditative practice, inadequate. The dualism of is and is not is inadequate, meaning too limited and not basic enough to address itself to human suffering. The genius of the Buddha saw, when he achieved enlightenment, that there was a reality more fundamental than existence and non-existence. And here is a passage from the Samyutta Nikaya where the Buddha addresses this issue directly. I'm going to quote from the sutta. This world, for the most part, is dependent upon a dyad, upon the notions of existence and non-existence. But for one seeing the world's origin as it really is with correct wisdom, the notion of non-existence does not occur in regard to the world. And for one seeing the world's cessation as it really is with correct wisdom, the notion of existence does not occur in, or non-existence does not occur in the world. This world is, for the most part, bound by involvement, clinging, and adherence. But this person who has the right view does not approach, does not cling, does not stand upon that involvement, clinging, mental standpoint, adherence, and tendency, myself. He is not perplexed and does not doubt that what arises is only suffering, arising, that what ceases is suffering ceasing. Without dependence on others, knowledge about this occurs to him. It is in this way that right view occurs. And this is the end of the quote. All exists. This is one extreme. All does not exist. This is the second extreme. Not having approached both these extremes, the Tathagata teaches the Dharma by the middle. With ignorance as condition, volitional activities come to be. With volitional activities as condition, consciousness. Such is the origin of this whole mass of suffering. It is also interesting to know here that Jean-Paul Sartre's book, Being in Nothingness, is a map, as it were, of the nature of consciousness and human existence. So the Buddha anticipated him by about 2,500 years. The middle named in this passage, because it is empty, it can hold the universe. Yet, and I might add counterintuitively, it remains empty and it doesn't really matter what is in it because it is empty. It can allay the misery of the living by revealing the nature of the human condition of life. Emptiness does not sidestep suffering. What it highlights by its contrast with being in nothingness is that the fact my living within that tennis match of this and that, of now or never, of yes and no, meets the heart's and mind's violence against itself. I am in conflict with myself by thinking yes and no, and by willing and nilling. Furthermore, when you think about it, it becomes apparent that profound grief is also a profound goodness, because it is holy, sacred, and true. Flowing towards the sea, like the stream which begins in the high mountains and carries the debris of our everyday lives, along with the refreshing, affirming joy we experience to its own demise in nirvana. A loss of the petty and also a gain of the sacred. Grief is a death that brings peace. If grief is understood in this way, grief teaches something that is so basic to happiness and so essential to the Dharma that the Buddha is rightfully considered a genius for discovering it. Don't grab at life. Just breathe it in and exhale it. If I hold my breath, I will pass out. But as soon as I do so, I will start breathing again. It seems that even breath knows the wisdom of letting go. What is real for me is Joe's death in 2020, and it still smarts like a bee sting which won't subside. That is an emptiness in my life, a hole that is in the shape of Joe. That hole will never be filled, and that hole should not be filled. I am happy about that for a very good reason. The hole, the emptiness in the shape of Joe, has morphed into the shape of a compassionate, ever so subtly smiling Buddha, who beckons me to find freedom in the grief of suffering, which compels me to understand the cause of that suffering, which then lures me into the path, which is the cessation of suffering, and that path is that compassion that I can really feel as holy and sacred. I learn to feel compassion for myself, and I now am able to feel compassion for others. There is no self. There is only the beautiful emptiness that is in the person I call me. And even though I cannot change the world of the scientists and the philosophers and the time of clocks that measure objective reality, my heart can take in all that surface stuff and transform it into holiness. You and I are the world. Then again, these life lessons are so simple that if children had the proper words, they could easily teach us about it. The present is where presents are made and given. So now, go outside and play. Play anything. Make it up if you have to. Create something new. There is always time for beginning. Do we have time for comments, objections? I object. Yes, Becky.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, I as you know, I lost my husband a year and a half ago.
Right.
And I have talked to so many people about the idea of loss. And one of the things that really struck me, which you and I have, I think, spoken about a little bit in the past, which we relate to very well, is that losing somebody that you love is something that we've all done in life. We've lost a parent or a friend or an aunt or a cousin or somebody. But losing the person that you share space with every day is a different type of loss. And when you have
I always liked that expression, although there's part of it that I didn't like, was that it's better to have loved and lost than not to have loved at all. And, you know, when you think about that, it's like, no, that's not good. That sucks. But the whole, that the emptiness that is left where the person was, that emptiness is, you can take with you. And that's a space to play in. Right.
I want to pick the bad one. I want to pick the one that is full of gratitude and love. So.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, too, is why ruin it?
Well, fair.
You know, with the anger. And I mean, all that stuff, you know, I can get upset over anything. But, okay, so I'm upset. It doesn't accomplish anything. And I like using that word holy, even though I'm no longer religious. I was raised Roman Catholic and became a Benedictine monk. So I, well into my adulthood, I was rather pious. And I have always liked the word holy and the word sacred as being something, you know, set apart. I think that's the way to look at, especially sacred. There's this... The old Roman circles, when they put the columns up and whatever and reserved that for either a statue of one of their gods, they called that place the Fanum, F-A-N-U-M. And what was before that is to say what was outside it, was called the Profanum, which is our word for profane. So profane is not bad necessarily, it's just outside the space of sacredness. Once again, we've got that circle. When someone passes, when someone dies, I like to use the word die because it's very descriptive. I think passing is okay. Some people like to use it, but I find it to be a little bit, what's the word I want? Cleansed of the pain part. You know. So anyway, that's my opinion. Thank you. Thank you for listening. I appreciate that. Thank you for not heckling me or anything.